Hello, and welcome to God in Film, the podcast where a Christian and an atheist dive into the best that cinema has to offer and see if we can find any parallels with gospel or any other Bible stories. I'm writer and Mark Kermode wannabe, Charles Goff.
And I'm librarian and caffeine addict, Julia Hall.
And today, for our first ever review show, we'll be looking at Bleeding Love, Jericho Ridge, and the Book of Clarence. Now, as you might have guessed, this is a slightly different format to what we normally do. Here at God of Film, we like to mix things up every so often. And let me just explain to you, let me just pull back the curtain and reveal exactly why we are doing what we're doing today. We normally don't review shows. We normally analyze them. We try our best to avoid whether we think they're good or not. I mean, let's be honest, I pick films that I'm interested in, so chances are I usually think they're pretty good for the most part. But let me tell you something else that's been happening to me quite recently. In the last few years, I've managed to pick up some work as like as a writer, as a critic, or just a freelance writer for a few different websites. If you type in Giles Goff author into Google, you'll see my name pop up in a few different places. And sometimes, very occasionally, if I'm very lucky, I might get the chance to see advanced screenings or screeners for stuff. And what I'll do is I will ping off an email to as many editors I can possibly think of and say, hey, I've got the chance to see this film early. Would you be interested in a review? And not always, but more often than not, you just get total silence. Nothing back whatsoever. And so as a result, you end up not going to see the film, and then you end up not writing a review for it, and it just completely passes you by. And then I've get people starting to say, you could talk about this on your podcast. Would you like to review this for your podcast? And I thought, well, yeah, why not? Do you know what I mean? If people are gonna give us shows and films to watch, why don't we review it on the podcast? The only thing that's stopping it is me, and I think we're okay on that. So today we're going to do some reviews. Are you okay with that?
I am A-okay with that.
Awesome sauce. Let's get started first off with Bleeding Love. So this is the new Ewan McGregor film that's coming out in the cinemas in 12th of April. So this film follows Ewan McGregor as he's playing actually opposite his real-life daughter. You picked up on that, yeah?
Yes, yeah. I did do a little Googling before I watched this. I love Ewan McGregor. How can you not love Ewan McGregor? That just everything about him is so wholesome.
That's the funny thing. There might be a generational difference here, okay? Because what would have been the first thing you ever saw Ewan McGregor in?
Obviously, Star Wars is the big one. But mm-hmm. I think, well, the first thing I ever heard him in was Moulin Rouge. And then when I finally got to watch Moulin Rouge, I heckin' loved that film.
Again, this is where we're going to show our age gap, because the first thing I saw him in was Trainspotting.
Oh, of course, yes, yeah.
So playing an addict, like climbing down the grossest toilet in Scotland, and now seeing him as a former addict trying to get his daughter through something we have come full circle.
Yeah.
Let me read you the synopsis. In hopes of reconnecting with his estranged child, a father embarks on an impromptu road trip with his now adult daughter, played by Clara McGregor, after she has a near-fatal drug overdose. He is planning to take her to rehab, though she doesn't know that. En route to their destination of Santa Fe, New Mexico, and encountering an array of eccentric characters along the way, the two are forced to confront the issues of their past, their trip proving less about the road that they're on and more about the troubled one from their past. So, Julia, what did you think of this film?
I liked it a lot more than I thought I would, because I think for me, it's these kinds of films, which are less about the destination, more about the journey, can often get a bit tropey and a bit tired quite quickly.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we get it. You guys don't get on. There's a lot of trauma, there's a lot of issues here. But the genius thing for me was peppering it with just the most absurd things possible to kind of almost distract you for a while and then kind of pull you back into that sort of quite festering.
It's quite episodic in parts, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, it was a funny one. I like say something like this sounds like it's going to be quite a worthy film. Do you know what I mean? And it is in some parts. I like this much more than I was expecting to. You know.
Yes, me too.
And I think it definitely wears its indie aspirations on its sleeve. You know, you get the second wave punk screaming in your ears in over the credit sequence. You get the sort of like yellowy sort of titles. It's like, here's my indie director film kit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's Starship Pack, you know, shaky camera.
Yeah, basically, you know.
Sort of semi-POV kind of angles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things I really like is the first scene where you see them driving along this long road in somewhere in the middle of nowhere, and she stops to pee at the side of the road, and then she just starts running into the desert.
Yeah.
And Ewan McGregor has to go and chase her, you know.
Because for a second I was a bit like, is this some kind of like thriller kidnap kind of film that I've misread this situation somehow? Yeah, just it really kind of drags you in with the bizarre kind of to begin with, and then
there's that bit where he says, what was your plan there? And she's like, I don't know, I was just kind of going with what seemed like an idea. Yeah, I like this more than I thought I would. It was, I think it really got to the heart of something in the sense that addicts are flipping boring, you know? And if you've got an addict in your life, just listening to them talk and listening to them convince you that they're not addicts and they can stop whenever they want, they just don't want to. Like, come on, man.
The fact that she kind of has that chat and then next an abandoned glass of red wine the second that her dad leaves. It's impulsive. It's almost like a subconscious kind of action when she does it. It's like, that's the thing that I need.
Yeah, that huge sort of impulsiveness to it, you know. And what I love about it, and we're not doing a God in Film episode on this, but if you wanted to, it is such an obvious parallel for, like, God's relationship to humanity. Do you know what I mean? It's a really good display of, like, unconditional love for somebody. And because she does dumb stuff and annoying stuff, and he keeps coming back, doesn't he? He keeps showing up for her. And I thought all the stuff about with it with their Alcoholics Anonymous was really interesting.
And that's another thing I really kind of, I say appreciate, but the fact that it was able to kind of get me like that with kind of almost a twist. But I mean, I did like the AA scene. I never felt that this film, it did a really good job of kind of not shaming addicts, but also kind of being like, you kind of need to help yourself, though. Like, other people can help you get there. And then after that, it's kind of up to you to take that final step, which is quite poetic.
Exactly.
Really.
The line I wrote down from the AA section was when the leader of it sort of says to them, no one can want this for you. You got to want this for yourself. Yeah. That works on so many different levels. You know, just the personal thing, the aspect of like, it's free will is so important. You know, and it's like I say, it wasn't a perfect film, because in a lot of ways, that sense of like seeing two people reconnect over a road trip is like, yeah, okay, I know where I am, but. Yeah. You find yourself really wanting everything to be okay for these characters. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, they're both, even like, as you say, even though she does some pretty stupid things. I mean, when she goes out on that kind of final bender, we feel bad for her. We feel incredibly bad for her. That's a really hard line, I think, sometimes to run for a character that is so quite inherently flawed but still likable and still has that sympathetic streak, so that we can actually root for them.
Definitely. What would you give this out of 5 stars?
Out of 5, I would give this a solid 4 out of 5.
Yeah, I'm a little bit cooler on it. I think I'd say three stars on this. But so how do you work out the stars in your head, or shall I tell you how I work my mind?
I mean, you are the professional. I am just an amateur.
Okay, so imagine like 5 stars, nailed on classic. We're going to be talking about this for years to come. Yeah, 4 stars, like probably one of the best films of the year, that kind of thing.
Okay.
3 stars is a good film, not firing on all cylinders, but it's still a good film. You don't feel like you've wasted your time.
Okay.
2 stars, yeah. You're like, okay, there were some serious mistakes here, and I don't know why you guys didn't figure this out.
Mm.
1 star, this film is so terrible. I disagree with this ideologically,
okay,
because it's so offensively bad. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, to be fair, giving with like the time frames in mind, I would maybe readjust to 3.5.
3.5.
I feel like this not maybe gonna kind of go super far in terms of kind of, you know, Oscar bait for the year type situation, but
mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I was gonna. It followed the trope enough, but had enough tweaks in it that it kept you guessing.
I'm hoping it'll be a really good stepping stone for Emma Westenberg, who's the director, and for Clara McGregor, who plays daughter, is what she's credited
Turbo.
As. Turbo. I really hope we get Turbo, yeah. I really hope we get to see more of her.
I agree.
Next up is Jericho Ridge. Jericho Ridge is written and directed by Will Gilby, and the cast is Nikki Amuka-Bird, Zach Morris, and Chris Riley. And the film basically follows Deputy Sheriff Tabby, Amuka-Bird, who finds herself alone in the remote sheriff's office one night while her colleagues are out on patrol. But she soon finds out they've been set up by a murderous drug cartel, while she herself comes under siege at the office, where she must desperately battle to save herself and her son. So, Julia, what did you think of this one?
This was so good.
Mm-hmm.
So good. It was just so taut.
Yeah.
Like, all the information they gave you, they gave it at just the right point that it would turn up again later, but not too later that you'd forgotten it, and not too early that you'd kind of... It was still fresh and therefore still a bit too obvious. I find they really laid the pieces out really well for this.
I feel you could teach this film in screenwriting class as like a masterclass in how to just use everything that you've got and use it so efficiently.
It's not super like, long either.
No, it's not. I think it's like 87 minutes, something like that. It's got literal Chekhov's gun in this. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know? There's a dodgy gun. If you use it wrongly, it could go off. I wonder what might happen there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel it also underlined this fact that I don't think Americans can be trusted with guns, frankly. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean the fact that a sheriff candidate, a civilian, is like, mm-hmm. I heard there were gunshots, I'm gonna come up and help. Like, no, you can't do that.
Please don't do that. And also, when him and his boys come down, they stand away from the truck, nice,
in the open,
clear targets. This is one of those things, it's such a uniquely American situation, because the problems stem here from the fact that the sheriff doesn't want to tell anybody because he's up for re-election.
Yeah.
Like, it's a horrendously bad idea to elect your law enforcement, because that is just, like, that's so weird. For British audiences, that's such a foreign concept, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that would be like, what would that be like, I guess? I suppose that would just be having like a party that is like the police party, like if the Met had their own political party. I think that would be terrible.
Voting for your policeman seems insane.
Yeah,
you know?
it seems very 1850 something. Do you know what I mean? Like, still kind of vaguely Wild West idea, where sheriff was both, you know, lawmaker and guy that would put the cuffs on you for stealing a horse.
Yeah. It's also nice to see all the British talent there. You've got the main woman, Nikki Amuka-Bird. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right. Last thing I remember her from was Torchwood. She's in, I think, the season 2 episode called Sleeper. Oh, that's got to be over like 15 years ago now. But
that's a little while. I don't want to think how long a little while ago that was.
And the son, believe it or not, I think is in EastEnders.
Oh, really?
I think his stage name is Zach Morris, which I find hilarious because that was the main character in Saved by the Bell. And I don't know if you even remember that. Plot-wise, it's quite slight, isn't it? You know, there's not a whole heap going on. But everything gets used. Everything is so tight and so focused. I was on the edge of my seat throughout so much of it.
It's refreshing having a character that is so clued in and on board and literally using every ounce of everything that she possibly has at her disposal. So that there was never a point where I was going, oh man, why have you done that? That's stupid. You know, there's there's one or two films, maybe a few more, sort of in the thriller and horror category where you look at characters and make stupid decisions for seemingly no reason, and that does not happen once in this film.
I don't know if I'd agree with you on that one, because you've got the...
Oh, I lie. Okay, maybe once, but I don't know if I'll agree on that.
You've
got
the one character who is there to be stupid, you know? The young fella, I'm trying to see if I can remember his name.
Oh, the nice kind of himbo cop.
Himbo cop?
Yes, I like him very much. So, to be fair, I'm more meant for sort of a lead kind of central role. But I think there are other people aplenty who sort of make bad decisions.
I mean, yes, I wish I could agree with you, but we got Himbo Cop, played by Solly McLeod, who part of his screw up is basically part of the reason that the entire film happens. But also, if you remember, the bad guy gets into the police station because she literally lets him in. Somebody knocks on the door and she says, "Are you the locksmith?" And he goes, "Yeah."
I mean, he has a toolbox, right? I'll take that as an honest mistake. The time I was thinking of is when it's interesting that we have another film with a strained parent-child relationship with drugs involved. I feel like that's like an English essay or a film essay kind of waiting to happen, comparing Bleeding
that
Love.
That did
and,
not occur to me. I feel we've also got a new way to telegraph to an audience when somebody's a villain. And it's if you are driving along and the person in the passenger seat just sticks their headphones on and doesn't want to talk to you. Like, this was the thing that occurred to me, right? It's like, if you have a kid, you have to love them even if they're annoying as hell. And I'm terrified for this possibility. Actually, to be fair, my kid has already hit the annoying. And we've got a proper three-nager in the house. And he's like, I love you and I'd die for you. But flipping out, you're a bit of a pain sometimes. You know? What would you give this film?
I'm stuck because the one dock point, I think, for me for this film was occasionally there was a slight overuse of, shucks, I missed my shot, which is fine maybe one or two times. But I felt that I was noticing it, and if I've noticed it, then maybe it's occurred a little bit more than it should have done.
Okay, all right.
There's human error, and then there's like plot human error. But to be fair, that is a very, very nitpick of a nitpick for it.
Okay.
So I think I'm gonna give this one a four out of five. I
think 4 out of 5 feels right for this one. It's not necessarily a genre that I would go to, like a siege kind of film, but it is a brilliant example of one. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Fantastic. So that is Jericho Ridge, which is released on Thursday, the 25th of April. Next up, we have The Book of Clarence. So this is going to be a little bit uneven because I've seen this and you haven't, and we'll go from there.
I'm excited to hear about it.
Okay, all right. So Book of Clarence follows the exploits of Clarence, who is a first century grifter, who, when he sees just how much money Jesus' ministry appears to have received, decides he's going to go into the Messiah business. But this scam lands him with a severe and unexpected consequences. Now, as our good friends Monty Python learned in 1979, Christians tend to be, how can I put this, a little bit wary of anything that could be construed as a parody of the life of Jesus. So this is like if Spike Lee had directed Life of Brian. It's that kind of, that should give you an idea. Okay?
I'm sold already. This is everything I could possibly want.
Stop talking, I'm on board, you know? So obviously, for any of my Christian friends listening, and one of my friends already has messaged me, Dave Rawls, who's a friend of mine, said, "I'd be very curious to hear what you think about Book of Clarence." He didn't know that I was reviewing it. He just knew at some point I'm going to see this film and I'm going to have things to say. You know, so for any of my Christian friends who are uncertain, let me put your mind at ease. Jesus is in this film. He is the Son of God. He demonstrably works miracles. and he doesn't do anything sketchy at all. The depiction of Jesus in this film is in no way, shape or form blasphemous, but, and I can't stress this enough, this is a 15 certificate. So that should probably give you a clue that this is probably not for your nan.
Ooh. Ooh.
Directed by a guy called James Samuel, who I only learned later on is a UK rapper under the name Bullets. It's like, okay, all right, fair play.
Interesting.
This dude not only wrote and directed the script, but he also did the score and the soundtrack as well. You know, like, some people are just too offensively talented.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, get a life.
Right. Yeah, stop rubbing it in our faces. It's actually produced by Jay-Z. So
oh, wow, really?
you know you're in for a good time, you know?
The soundtrack must be interesting. I say not what you maybe expect for a first century set film.
Yeah, do you know what it reminds me of? Did you see The Great Gatsby?
I love that film.
So what they did with that was they took all the jazz out and they put like hip-hop in.
Yes, and I remember my lit teacher at A-level hated it. For that exact reason.
But the thing is, like, jazz now is specifically the realm of, like, middle-aged, pasty, white dudes who are going to tell you that that's not really jazz and who are going to bore the heck out of you for, like, five hours.
It's not really on my get-turn list.
Yeah, it wasn't until I think I saw a film years ago where you realize, oh, no, wait. Jazz was cool at some point and there were girls there. That's what it's missing. So by putting the hip-hop in,
yeah, it gives you I agree
the sense of what it feels like rather than
yeah
exactly what it was, you know. Yeah. There's that thing on Instagram of where somebody goes plays like songs like 99 Problems and they'll go what I hear and you hear the original track and then you see the kid in the back seat and it's like Frank Sinatra singing it, you know. Yeah. Second thing. Anyway, we're getting a little bit off topic. So the film opens, believe it or not, with Clarence, who's played by Lakeith Stanfield, who I adore, losing a fast-paced chariot race through Jerusalem to Mary Magdalene, of all people.
Amazing.
I know, right?
I love Mary Magdalene.
It's what we've been missing all this time, you know? After a series of trials, Clarence decides the best way to earn money is to set himself up as like a false messiah. He'll go performing miracles on plants in the crowd and he'll preach his message that knowledge is stronger than belief. Because as he says, you ever seen Jesus buy a pair of sandals? You know, I thought that was... It's a funny film because there are some definite laugh out loud moments, but if it's going to be a comedy, it needs to be funnier. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of being pulled in two different directions because on the one end, it wants to be this sort of like very wry comedy. On the other end, it wants to give you some political and social commentary in there. And the two just don't quite gel. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? You could argue there's some kind of Black Lives Matter sort of commentary going in there. There's this moment where one character is having to sort of like drag his cross to be crucified. And his mother shouts out, they always take our babies, which kind of gets you right there. Like takes you straight to those like so many horrendous killings that we've seen by like Black people in America by the police. Yeah. And that's undercut by a film where when somebody has a good idea, a light bulb literally appears above his head, you know? So it doesn't quite know what it wants to be. I think, for me, this film was a bit like a, you know, like an admirable failure?
Yeah.
You know, it's like a big, they've taken a big swing and it doesn't quite land, but I'm still thinking about it like days after the fact, you know?
Bright is that film for me. That is my admirable failure film.
Bright, did you say?
Bright. It's a cracking urban fantasy film.
The Will
film.
Smith one?
Yes.
On Netflix? I haven't seen it. Do you reckon I should give it a try?
Worth a watch in that it is... Yeah, admirable failure is probably the best way to describe it, is that it has such a good premise and the execution just isn't quite there yet.
Yeah, the cast list in this is amazing. You've got Lakeith Stanfield, who he was in Sorry to Bother You in 2018, which if you get the chance to watch that, it's one of my favorite films. Alfra Woodard is Mother Mary in this. She has this brilliant line where she's telling a story. She says, "I was minding my own virgin business, just being a virgin." I was like, yes, that's Absolutely classic, you know. And James McAvoy turns up as Pontius Pilate in this.
Oh, wow.
And how can I put this? Jimmy's been working out, yo.
Like, does he make Pontius Pilate a bit sexy?
Yeah, a little bit. Like, they don't pull any punches with the Romans. The Romans still suck. But there's this one bit where he kind of rests his hands on his...
On his breastplate kind of thing.
Breastplate, yeah. Just like, and his forearms look massive, you know?
That's why it's 15 jars. It's for the impure thoughts that James McAvoy instills in an audience.
There, and the arms are up. I'm like, damn.
Ooh.
Somebody's been hitting the gym. And, you know, you throw in a little bit of eyeliner there and damn, we're off to the races, you know? So, yeah. Also, I won't say who, but there is an MCU actor who turns up in this.
Exciting.
In a... not quite a cameo, but sort of a cameo, who is virtually unrecognizable when you see him. It's wicked.
Ooh.
So I think for me, I think I gave this film about 3 stars because it's good, but it's not quite there. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
So that's The Book of Clarence, and that is out on the 19th of April. And I would say check it out. I think you're
from
I think
what
you're
gonna... told, James McAvoy's forearms. Here I come. You have me at James McAvoy getting ripped.
There we go. That's all we have time for today, ladies and gentlemen. If you have been, thanks for listening. Julia, have you had a good time?
I've had a great time.
Yeah, this is fun, isn't it?
This has been really fun. Yeah, this is very, very chill, very new.
I've not had to agonise about this for a year about how I'm going to talk smack about the Mormons, you know? Yeah. So it's quite a refreshing change. If people want to hear more of this, then, you know, please send us more films and we'll review those ones too.
Yes,
in the meantime, we'll see you next time, whenever that is. Bye!
Bye! God in Film is hosted and created by Giles Goff.
That's me.
Mixing and editing by Giles. Our logo was designed by
Julie Walsh.
And our theme tune was composed by
Rick Lee.
Waffle editing by
Natalie Minnicker.
Please rate and review.
Please give us 5 stars because that's a nice thing to do.